Hello and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, a panel of Chicago poets reads from and discusses their contributions to the recent collection, Wherever I'm At, an anthology of Chicago poetry. The following conversation originally took place May 15th, 2022, and was recorded live at the American Writers Festival.
Welcome to the Millennium Park Partner Stage at the American Writers Festival. I'm Linda Dunleavy, Director of Development at the American Writers Museum, and I'm delighted to introduce today's final program, sponsored by the Chicago Public Library and the Chicago Literary Hall of Fame. Poets Angela Jackson, Jahani Vasquez Paz, and Faisal Mohedian are here to read from and discuss their contributions to the forthcoming anthology, Wherever I'm At, an anthology of Chicago poetry. This conversation will be moderated by Carlos Cumpian, and I'm going to have Jennifer come up and say a couple words.
Good evening. I'm Jennifer Lezak with the Cultural, Civic, and Literary Engagement Department at Chicago Public Library. And on behalf of everyone at CPL, I'd like to welcome you to this afternoon's event. It's CPL's pleasure to be here today to help celebrate the American Writers Museum's fifth anniversary and the first, but hopefully not last, American Writers Festival. The American Writers Museum has been a great partner to CPL since its opening, and we want to send our congratulations and best wishes to everyone at the museum for the success of building and growing a great place for Chicagoans and visitors from around the world to explore the history, present, and future of the American writer. And what better way to celebrate than with this discussion celebrating another wonderful achievement, the publication of the new anthology, Wherever I'm At, an anthology of Chicago poetry, from our dear friends and partners at the Chicago Literary Hall of Fame. Congratulations to Don and everyone at the Hall of Fame, as well as all the fantastic Chicago poets featured on this wonderful occasion. Thanks for letting CPL be a part of the event and celebrate with you. And now I'm pleased to welcome Don.
Thank you, everybody. I am not going to say much because Carlos Cumpian is a maestro. He is a leader of poets and community builder. He is one of our fabulous literary heroes here in Chicago, and I can say that of everybody on this stage and also just about everybody included in this book. But if I were doing the introductions, I would start everything with the great Angela Jackson, and so forth, right? Because they are. They truly are. The talent here on this stage tonight and in this anthology is enormous. Carlos, himself a poet, just came out with his fourth collection, Human Cicada, and he's also written a children's book. He's a publisher, and here's Carlos to take it the rest of the way. Thank you, Carlos.
All right. Thank you. All right, so it's May. It may snow, it may rain, it may, who knows what it is. It's May. All right. I may not have gotten here. They closed off the street for a minute, and we were supposed to have come down, but there was a demonstration, as there should be, and maybe some violence. I heard someone mumbling. Is that true? They have violence in Chicago? I want to definitely say that the feat of coming out with this anthology of our city's wealth. We have so many talents assembled in this, gathered in this anthology, people who you may have seen and actually heard, and maybe you only got a chance to read their work but not see them. That's true. That happens. Some people in this anthology were briefly in Chicago, and I say briefly, maybe a decade, maybe a semester. No, but they were here. They were in Chicago, and some are lifelong residents. Some have never left. Some were born here, but many moved in and moved out, and that's going to be one of our topics. We're going to talk a little bit about why Chicago and how is it that people do come here, and I'll be asking that question to our panel tonight. So some of the people who we have here, of course, Angela Jackson, I want to read her note real quick here. And Faisal, let me say your last name, and you can tell me if I ruined it completely or not. Mohyuddin? Huh? Ah, très bien, monsieur. Okay, I got it. It's not French, it's Pakistani. But all right, and so we... We have Johanny Vasquez Bas, who I've known for a while. I have to admit that she is also an editor, and not just a poet, and she's done some terrific editing for, let me talk about her, 2018. She won a PAZ, P-A-Z, a PAZ prize as part of the, for poetry, as the National Poetry Series that was held in Miami and at the book fair there. And for her book, if you have not read it, please read it. You will be amazed. I have been amazed by it. And the book is called I Offer My Heart. I Offer My Heart as a Target. I do have a copy of the book. I was going to pick it up and wave it, but we'll hold off on that. Ofrezco mi corazón ni como una indiana. And this is a great book. Her other publications include Sagrada Familia. She has other books that she's published in Spain and Streetwise Poems, Poemas Callejeros, back in 2007, one of her big books. And so she did some publishing for the organization I have been with called March Abrazo Press, and she published with Johanny and Brenda Cardenas, co-edited a terrific collection that sold out like that overnight of all Latina writers, poets, in the collection called Between the Heart and the Land. And that was way back in 2001. Anybody who wants to do another All Latina anthology, I'm pretty sure it's going to sell real well. Okay, so that's some of our word for Johanny Vasquez Paz, who is also getting ready to do a bit of a tour of these United States before she looks over at Europe. So that's going to happen, I hope. We're working on that, right, Wilfredo? Mm-hmm. Right, we're working on that. And so I'm really proud to say, happy to say, and we should all be happy to look and know that we have the Poet Laureate of Illinois right here, Angela Jackson. She is our fifth Poet Laureate and one of 12 Chicago authors that has been honored within the Chicago Literary Hall of Fame's Fuller Award for Lifetime Achievement. She has published a variety of chapbooks and four full volumes of poetry. She is originally from Mississippi, and she was raised on Chicago's South Side. Educated at Northwestern University and the University of Chicago, her collections include Voodoo Love Magic, all the way back to 1974. Bing, that's the magic number, 1974. Let's hear that again. And Dark Legs and Silk Kisses, The Beatitudes of the Spinners. Let me tell you, I've been reading that book. I've been going over that book. And I'm glad I own glasses because I don't know why they decided to print that book in such small, fine print, but it was worth, like, it's like reading the ingredients of that magic potion that you need to take, and you start reading and then you discover there's so much going on. And Angela has also been awarded the Carl Sandburg Award and the Sun-Times Friends of Literature Award. There are many awards in her repertoire of writing. I will say that Angela Jackson has encouraged many people, mentored many people, and brought them to develop their own style of writing. So her collection, More Than Meat and Raiment Poems, was published by Northwestern University just this year in 2022. Is there a copy in the house of that book? And here it is with a beautiful collage, and we see Frederick Douglass looking through the window there. So that is our book that I'm going to have to get. That's a new one. And Faisal Mohiuddin is a writer, educator, and visual artist. Yes, he teaches English to high school students. Don't you want to see a saint today? Here's a saint. Okay. I've done it. I'm done. My sainthood halo is gone. So, but you still have yours. He is the author of, I love this title, The Displaced Children of Displaced Children. It is a sad concept, but there it is, right? And published in 2018. And also he has a chapbook, The Riddle of Longing, that he did just a year prior to that, 2017. And his work has received the Illinois Arts Council Literary Award, Gwendolyn Brooks Poetry Award. Prairie Schooner has recognized him and acclaimed him. There has been many other people recognizing what he has done. He has appeared in many journals and anthologies. He's been with the Poetry Center, Poetry Magazine. Some of you, of course, can hear some very interesting interviews with him. If you haven't heard some previous interviews with him, they are online. Just type his name in, and you will get a chance to hear some of those very interesting interviews. All right. And again, I am Carlos Cumpian. I'm originally from Texas, just like Angela's from the South. I'm from the South. I'm from South Texas. And we came up here, and we came up for the weather. That's why my family decided to come up here. We didn't want to work. We wanted to just enjoy the good weather of Chicago, right? No. And so nobody comes here for the weather. Is that true? That is true. And so we came up here, and I managed to drop out of high school and eventually find myself in college. And from that, I was able to eventually one day become a teacher. So that's all my business stuff. But the other things that I decided after meeting older poets who had girlfriends who said, you know what, if you want a girlfriend, be a poet. Ah, perfect. So I decided to start writing poetry, and the rest is history. So I'm not going to leave it at that. All right. We are on property right here where the Odawa, the Ojibwa, the Potawatomi, these are their indigenous homelands. And this land was placed here, this building was placed here only because of settler colonialism of the United States. That said, I will greet you, and at least in one indigenous language, and I will say Thiawi, that is the language of the Mexica, who are my ancestors too. And I will say hello again, greetings, thank you again for being here. And I'm going to go ahead and follow this. If we're ready, can everybody find their poem? Let's get people, if you get your mics ready, let's hear the poem in the anthology that each of these poets have. How's that? Right? Okay. So let's open with Angela. Are you up for that now? Or?
Summer and the City, Chicago then, in memory of Robert Hayden. Summer nights, cool came down, blotting heat like a kiss for colored children. Heat surged as we danced, jagged up and down the street, played hide and seek. Last night, night before, 24 robbers at my door. I got up, let them in, hit them in the head with a rolling pin. All hid among the leaves of church hedges, we smelled something slow and splendid in our sweat. Our fathers, we knew, worked good jobs that required muscle. Our mothers in day work used elbow grease and unwritten receipts for smothered chicken and gravy, caused white women to envy and delight. Outside, mothers waited for aid checks and the long gone man, large women on folding chairs, ate chunks of Argo starch. Lean days, sugar sandwiches, ketchup or mayonnaise, missing meat, a vague notion, love, manna. Twilight blessed the blocks, poured from a dark man's mouth, like a spout of Joe Louis milk, our champion toast, heralding the greatest arrival. However long the getting there, slow rocking grandmothers spit out words into small cans held in their hands, their eyes trained on us from deep south porches we never left behind, never left us even after Exodus. Mouths wide open, we drank the evening's pleasure, men, women who loved us more than what we could have known. We were their quick, flashing hope treasures, the memory of us, their milk, their honey.
Angela Jackson, thank you. Yohani.
Buenas noches. Good evening. Can you hear me?
Is it on?
Okay. So I'm also from the South. Way south in Puerto Rico. I was born and raised in Puerto Rico. And from Puerto Rico, I came to the United States to go to university, Indiana State University, Terre Haute, Indiana. And then eventually I came to live in Chicago. And this poem is dedicated to Humboldt Park because I have lived in United States, in places like Flint, Michigan, Terre Haute, Indiana, other parts of United States that don't have a Puerto Rican neighborhood. So I do know what it is to be in a place where there is nothing in Spanish, no Spanish TV, no Spanish radio, that I cannot find the coffee I like, or the food that I want. So that's the amazing thing of Chicago. I mean, even though it's a segregated city, we all can build our place here and make it grow. This poem is called A World of Our Own, to the people of Humboldt Park. Between two flags, we built the path of an island exiled to memories. We put up colonial balconies and replaced the asphalt for paving stones, the parks for plazas, the supermarkets for colmados, American coffee with cafe Yaucano, and hamburgers for steak jibaritos. We changed street names and words in Spanish, from desfile to parada, from patio to yarda, from alfombra to carpeta, from mercado to marqueta, because we are bilingual y podemos mezclarlas. We put flavor in the food, rhythm to the music, murals on the walls, accents on the words, heat to the cold. We open botanicas, cultural centers, galleries, museums, restaurants, and anything else we needed so our children could learn their heritage of waves returned to shore mixed with the blood of three races. We built a world of our own between two flags, a neighborhood with well-known faces, familiar aromas, and noises kept company by the rumble of the drum. Our homeland in exile that floats like a desert island in the deep and vast sea of the city of Chicago.
Thank you, Angela. Thank you, Yohani. Thank you all for being here. So I grew up in the south suburbs of Chicago, in Matteson. If you know Matteson, it's south of 80 near Homewood Flossmoor, Chicago Heights. That's my kind of childhood home. And my poem is about Ella Fitzgerald, the jazz singer. And so she was from the south. She moved to suburban New York. Her mother had married, had remarried, and her new kind of stepfather's family and home was there. And then she lost her mother at a young age. Mother died in a car accident, and she was very shy growing up, and she learned to sing at church. And I write a lot about my parents and grandparents, those that I knew and didn't know. And music has always been a way of connecting me to my own history and my own past. And so when I learned Ella Fitzgerald's story, I felt this resonance with hers. So this is called Ella Fitzgerald, Entering Chicago by Train, Remembers Her Mother's Voice. And it's in Ella's voice. Mother kept church songs tucked inside her brassiere, warmed by the bursting fullness of her bosom. and like candied wishes, she popped them one after another in her mouth. And despite the shyness we shared like blood and that forgotten history of our ancestors, she sang open the two small August mornings of Yonkers while doing the laundry of olive-skinned strangers whose worn undergarments ferried here from unremembered Italian villages held the grime and loss of a new life not much better than ours. But her voice, honeyed by the sweet black southern earth, which she'd forsaken for new love and another new beginning, clutched within it a divine light so impossibly rich, it rendered my music wild daydreams delicious, pure enough to pursue like God himself in the dreadful crush of days after the crashing suddenness of her death. Now, after eons of starlit darkness west of New York, as we bend up along the sweep of this city's golden coast, feeling in the sway of this steel body, the winds shoving across Lake Michigan, I feel a warm, cleansing trepidation of the new, just as Mother must have felt coming north to see with a child's eyes the perfect beauty of her blackness as it unfolded against a freshly painted sky. Longingly, I see her now, a holy radiance glowing above the big-shouldered metropolis where tomorrow night, against the shimmering rush of Rush Street, I will sing her back to life. And in the crystalline stillness of Mr. Kelly's, climb up to her in heaven on the silver rungs of her favorite songs. Thank you. Thank you.
So what about the Department of Tourism saying, you want to know Chicago? You get to take a poet with you. And they give you a tour through, via poetry, right? You take a tour around Chicago with a poet. That might be interesting, huh? That's another idea. How many of you have seen, there was a restaurant / club called the 10th Muse in English, La Decima Musa. Some of you, of course, I mean, the Guild Complex people and the After Hours Literary Hounds, all you guys, you all know about that. But if you were to go to Blue Island and 18th Street, you've been there, anybody? Blue Island and 18th Street? All right. You go over there and you go down the road past the Rudy Lozano Library. There was a club there, a restaurant, that we'd have poetry readings at. And they had a very interesting room set up, a community room. It wasn't just for, it was for eating, but it was also used for community organizing. And the women who founded it were teachers. So, of course, they were activist teachers. And La Decima Musa, so this is the poem I included, or got to have included. If you want to try to follow, it's on you. It's at 222. On page 222, but anyway, dedicated to the founders of the La Decima Musa, Carmen Velasquez and Rosario Rabelia. Okay, it's after hours. Pilsen's Decima Musa's silent restaurant, its kitchen, oven, and stove now cooled. The empty sink's faucet drips. At 3 a.m., lone passing cars radio headset music, when in the main room ghostly realms banter begins. Decima Musa, the 10th muse, named for the rebellious Mexican Catholic nun Sor Juana Inez de la Cruz, a place for community organizing, enjoying food, drinks, music, and dancing, but also stories and poesia, cuentos, and poetry. In the performance room, its wall hosts posters of leaders like Mexico's Raza Cósmica José Vasconcelos, laughs with mystical poet and novelist Rainer Maria Rilke, a Bohemian Austrian voice giving advice about the craft to emerging young writers. The two agree old man Siqueiros should paint a new mural somewhere on South Loomis that won't intimidate the virgin or tradition-bound taco artists many enjoy but always annoy local celebrity artist Marcos Raya. In response, David Alfaro Siqueiros furrows his bushy eyebrows and says, "You two philosophers should get your own video channel." And he goes back to reading Chicago's Spanish cultural newspaper, Contratiempo, Benito Juarez asleep in his suit. The other political and literary poster figures like Pablo Neruda, José Martí, that populate the walls refrain from commenting about the pocho poems heard at the open reading, but instead praise the evening's charming Puerto Rican poet hostess, Ms. Vasquez Paz, who stood at the matte gunmetal mic, so blessed to be the memories that were made better with tequila or just iced tea, never needing a fire extinguisher while a late night beacon burned for over 28 abriles, for 28 aprils, for those fine Adelitas y otro rebeldes, swinging bilingually and trembling our collective buzz for la palabra pura at this old port of entry in the city, Simón que sí, but now it's all history. There you go. All right. Thank you. Gracias. We all come at our poetry from the language that oftentimes we were born with and sometimes we had to acquire. Again, I think we could intimate a little bit, or was it clearly stated that Yohani didn't speak English as her first language? Is that true? You spoke Spanish as your first language. Is that true? Right.
Still.
Right. True. True.
Still.
So Yohani. Though I've heard plenty of her poems in Spanish.
I wrote it in Spanish.
You write primarily in Spanish.
Yes.
Right. And okay. So that's, you're more comfortable. You have written in English though.
Not a lot. No.
No. Okay. Now we're finding out. Okay.
Actually, something they always advise me not to do, but it's a way of me of not being conquered.
Who is the they that tell you not to write in English?
A literary agent. I live in the United States. I do understand concept. No, you know.
But you have written a number of books, and so they have all been translated, though, right? All of them?
No.
Okay. Which ones are translated? How many books do you have in total?
Four. And the first one, the last one. In the third one, I convinced the publisher to add some translations, but okay. Not the whole book is translated.
Okay. All right. So you all know that, of course, Spanish is the second language of the United States, right? We all know that. So, but hemispherically, it is pretty much, I think, the largest language, isn't it? Or maybe not. Do you think, is there more English speakers in the Western Hemisphere? Or Spanish speakers, who can help me? Google
Spanish.
That. No, don't.
I think it's Spanish.
But I think there's an awful lot of Spanish speakers. There's all kinds of Spanish, all kinds of different variants of Spanish. What dialects, as they say, right? Yohani, you taught at Chicago City Colleges. Is that true?
Yes.
How many years did you do that?
20-some years. Yes.
And you started when you were 20 years old and you just retired.
Yes, probably. Okay.
All right. So that's great. And you, what were you teaching?
Spanish.
Por supuesto, español. Ya está. Okay.
So, you know, I really promote bilingualism. and which is something we grew up in Puerto Rico. You know, Puerto Rico, there's always also these discussions, you know, about the languages and all that, that they try to impose English. And but I wish here people, some people, you know, I'm scared, I think, of other languages in a way that they think that we are a threat to them. And I don't understand that. You know, that learning another language or not speaking the language or something, it's like a crime. Sometimes they see you're a criminal, you live here. But in Puerto Rico, you know, there are a lot of Americans and none of them learn Spanish. Okay. And people are always forced to talk to them in English. And I know, because I was married to an American that lived in Puerto Rico, and he had really good jobs, and he didn't learn Spanish. So why can't everybody learn another language with other or more?
Excellent point.
I wish I knew more than two.
Excellent point. Let's see a show of hands. How many people are bilingual in this room, speak more than one language? Oh, we got 2, 4, 6, 7. Okay, well, we got some people like, oh, maybe I speak, you know, I speak Chicagoese, you know. I know what a gangway is, you know. Hey, you know, some people in other parts of the country said, I'll be standing in the gangway. What? And I have no idea what you're talking about. I'm going through the viaduct. The what? Let's talk to Angela. Angela, when we talk about language, you write, would you say with influence from the South, or do you write influence when you were writing? Do you feel like, what year did you arrive in Chicago? Were you a child? Or what, you were one? So you have a Chicago vocabulary all through and through. So you really did.
The people on my block were from Mississippi. So it was like Little Mississippi.
Little Mississippi.
Yeah.
So there were certain references that people just got because they had that background.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you give us an example of anything like that that we might have an idea of?
A mess of greens.
A mess of threes?
Yeah, a mess of greens. You know that you're going to have a pot of greens, you're going to have a certain amount of greens that's going to be cooked. It'll be a mess of greens.
Oh, a mess of greens, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, greens. Right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
How many of you heard that before? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. See, that's a new one for me. I don't know that one. We're going to hear some different stuff. Faisal, I suspect that you may have been in a bilingual home as well. Is that
true?
Yeah,
it was a trilingual home, actually.
Trilingual.
So it was. So my parents are from Pakistan. They immigrated in my dad in 1971 to Chicago, my mom in 1976. So it was Punjabi, Urdu, and then English was, I mean, they were very keen on speaking the Pakistani Indian languages at home, knowing that we would pick up. I was the oldest child, and so the language, you know, so it was, English was not, even though I was here, like, I think it just slowly kind of eased into it as I was getting older. And so, and I feel very fortunate that they made that decision to speak those languages at home, because I can understand them to a certain extent and speak in them in a certain extent. And so.
Some of you have relatives that, of course, probably spoke a language other than English, and they used it when they wanted to be sneaky, right? They spoke it, and then they were saying something in Polish or German or whatever it was, and you thought, I don't know what they're saying. It's like, that's okay, Dar. Don't worry about it, child. You know, we're just doing this language here, right? And so, but your relatives wanted you to dialogue with them in the home tongue. And you said Urdu and Punjabi and English and what else?
I mean, those are the three. I'm sorry. Johan, you mentioned colonialism. I mean, so people in South Asia have been colonized into learning English, and so that's still the national language. But I think there's, when people want to really talk to each other, it's not in English.
Okay.
And so I think that was part of it as well. Like, how much do we want? I mean, there are so many layers or levels of communication that happen, and different languages access different depths of it. And so, and these are things I've learned over the course of time.
I have to ask you, Do you write in, have you tried writing in the non-English languages?
I've tried, but I don't have the vocabulary. I mean, I do have to give a shout out to someone in the audience. There is Mr. Atamjeet Singh there. He's a renowned Punjabi playwright from India. I just recently met him. He's actually started translating my poems into Punjabi.
Thank you.
And I will say that I'm really honored that you are here for this event. But when I heard the first translation, the recording, and this is like a metaphor, I don't know if I've shared it with Mr. Atamjeet here, but I feel like the English, even though that's like what I write in, my first like spoken, I mean, what I'm a high school English teacher, like that's the language I'm living in constantly, is that whatever the English I'm able to capture is like the gift wrap around the gift or the thing inside, and then the Punjabi is like the language in my DNA and my blood, and I have never had the language to express that. And so when I've heard these translations, I'm like, he has reached into my soul, into my heart, into my history, into my heritage, my DNA, whatever that would be, and put it in this really beautiful language. And so that's what I'm really fascinated about. I mean, your work being translated, and it's an extremely new, I would say, in the last 3 weeks, experience for me, and so it's been very special to have that. So just in terms of how we speak, the different types of languages that we speak, all of us have multiple languages, whether we call it English or not, but I think the variation, the various ways in which we express each other, like a mess of greens, there's something that's being expressed with those words that me using a different English could not express, and so mm-hmm. I think that's it's something, it's more and more fascinating to me as time goes on.
I love the fact that Angela sang some of her poem. And singing, of course, is another way of heightening our language, is it not? Angela, do you have many poems where you incorporate singing in your poems? Do you a number of poems where you bring a song into the poem, or you blend a
yeah,
song?
Yeah, I like to do that, but I can't sing.
Well, you did a fair job. I mean, I'm not a real judge of singing or anything like that, but you did sing, and do you? I mean, here we have Faisal talking about a singer, right? And he brings some lyrics into the piece. And do you quote other singers in your poems?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I have a poem, "Children of Blues," where I imitate Little Milton. You know, Grits Ain't Grocery, Eggs Ain't Poultry, and Mona Lisa was a man.
Ooh.
You know, and I do a play on a Nina Simone song. I'm gonna put a. She says I'm gonna put a spell on you, and I say I'm gonna put an X on you.
Okay.
You know, a little different, but I do weave music in poems.
So I'm gonna ask this question of our panel up here: What influence other than, okay. If you were to think about your writing, and we're a very visual culture, so, I mean, as a culture, what film, think about this, is there a film, a movie, something you saw that influences your writing at all, if any? Any movie, anything come to mind?
You know, it's funny because I haven't even think about this movie. When I was little in Puerto Rico, I grew up nearby an area that there were a lot of movie theaters.
Okay.
You know. In one poem, I compare the avenue to Milwaukee Avenue.
Okay.
Which back in the, you know, or even State Street, in the sense that there were a lot of stores and there were movie theaters, which disappeared because the mall, mm-hmm. once they build the first mall, you know, it ruined the area, you know, because people don't go shopping. They all go shopping to the mall. But I used to sometimes go young by myself to the movie theater. And very young, I remember watching Jonathan Livingston Seagull. It was poetry. You know, it was poetry for me. You know, I saw it. Remember, I live maybe 4 blocks from the beach. I don't know. It was poetry. I was connected already with poetry through my grandfather. And that movie, I don't know. It was poetry.
Okay.
Like, how can I describe? Because I don't know. I wanted to do what the seagull was doing.
You wanted to give word to what you have seen.
Yes, to that feeling of that movie.
Angela, do you have? Is there a film that
it wasn't as a poet? It was reading Little Women by Louisa May Alcott.
Okay.
It was as a writer, and then seeing the film Little Women, that I wanted to be a writer. And I think her independence, her devotion to the act of writing fascinated me. And I remember shortly after reading that, I took a trip to Mississippi, and I experienced firsthand that kind of crude racism, you know. And I wrote my friend Bunny that I would write a novel on Southern hospitality. Yeah.
Thank you, Angela.
Angela. Did you write the novel?
Did you write
I've written novels, yeah.
Yes. But the one about Southern hospitality?
Did you write
it? It's in there, yeah.
It's in there, excellent.
It's in your novel. The hospitality is in the novel, and the novel is?
Yeah. I have two novels.
Which one is the one that we would see that?
Both of them. They're connected. Okay. Where I Must Go and Roads Where There Are No Roads. They're really one novel.
Okay.
Broken apart into two.
Yeah. Yeah. So for me, I mean, like Bollywood is like a huge, just the whole industry. So my dad, I always remember him like singing old film songs, and so I remember as a kid, I like did not like watching these movies. I was like, why is every like other scene a musical number where like the couple is in India in one moment and then in the Swiss Alps in the next moment and then in you know some beautiful garden in the Far East in another moment. But I think the songs of the films were really important to me. The movie that really struck me in terms of writing, so I write a lot about memory and not having access to memory because a lot of the things that I've been curious about, so family history or national, regional history from India, Pakistan, it was never shared. It was like almost like silenced. And so there's that movie, The Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, of where people are getting their memories erased. And I remember it being like a really haunting movie. It's goofy. It's a really brilliant movie, I think. But that sense of there's been so much active forgetting that, or the attempt to forget things, and it never is successful. So I always think about the fact that not having been told things made me more hungry to know those things and more curious, and that like curiosity, that hunger has been like the number one impulse that has inspired my writing. And so it's not maybe directly from that movie, but that idea.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're coming up to about the time we need to sign off from this event today. We want to thank you for bringing us together and for all of you being here. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks. Thank you for everything.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AWM Author Talks podcast. Next week, students from the National Student Poets Program discuss their work and the importance of poetry, recorded live at the American Writers Festival. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.